Make sure to check us out on Letterboxd for written reviews.
For films that we've done not only on the podcast, but outside of the podcast too.
Links in the description below.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast. My name is Samuel.
And my name is Jaden.
And this is a podcast where we talk extensively about a certain film and then decide whether it deserves a rewatch from you. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other place you listen to podcasts. And you can give us a like on the YouTube video if you like the podcast. So what are we talking about today, mate?
Today we are talking about a long-awaited movie that I've been sort of trying to get you to see for quite some time.
Mm.
And that is Mission Impossible Fallout. Obviously, this is the sixth edition in the franchise. And there is obviously five that precede this that we haven't done podcasts on.
Yeah.
But is it really worth it doing podcasts on them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like this is the standout movie in the franchise so far that probably has the most merit and most content to talk about it. You could probably make an argument for that being Rogue Nation, but for me, it's Fallout.
Yeah, well, there's a certain movie, I think, from just reading off your suggestions to me,
mm.
as somebody who hasn't seen any of the Mission Impossible movies, and you having seen all of them,
mm-hmm.
As to where to start, what to skip.
Yep.
So we watched the first one, and then you told me to skip the second and the third one.
Yep.
Which seems fair enough, considering one of them was directed by J.J. Abrams.
Yep.
Who's never made a good movie in his life, from what I can see so far anyway. And then as soon as you get to Ghost Protocol, it's like, okay, this franchise is actually going somewhere.
It sort of becomes something else. Yeah. Like it really did like a 180 in terms of its, what it was sort of aiming for. Number one was good. I think I saw it drop down on your
Letterboxd. Yeah, no, it's a bit old, you know. Yeah, it's
outdated.
The stunts, like the water stunt, you know, with the exploding aquarium or whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
That was great, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of CGI towards the end of that movie, yeah. And it just really is not good.
Like, yeah, no, I understand that.
And just like as a script itself, like it's a bit outdated. Like,
yeah,
it feels like an old action movie.
In a way, it feels like an old sort of English, you know, spy thriller mm. movie. Obviously, it's not an English film, but yeah, that's sort of the gist of Mission Impossible 1. And then 2 and 3, I don't know, they were kind of meh for me, and they're really forgettable. But from 4 on, I mean, Ghost Protocol onwards, mm. I think they're all, like, really good.
Yeah.
They're not all fantastic, but they're all very solid action movies.
Mm. Yeah.
Sort of like the Daniel Craig era of Bond, in a way, where there's a few standouts, and then there's some really decent movies as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, and none of them. Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the terrible ones, so I don't know how they compare to, like, Quantum of Solace, because that movie's atrocious.
Yeah, that's a bad movie.
But yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed watching this franchise. I think there are things that are very unique to the Mission Impossible franchise that other movies don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm keen to sort of talk about those more generally and then specifically about what's different about Mission Impossible Fallout and how it compares to other sort of action movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go into some general things and we won't give away too much sort of detail about the film.
Because there is some spoilers.
Yeah, there's a few twists and turns along the way. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, you know, your recommendation of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're a big fan of it, so you're obviously going to recommend it to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you are watching this franchise for the first time, I feel like we always say this. If you're like a hardcore fan of action, and you want to complete a series, which I think you usually do, you have to, you feel obligated to watch all of the movies in a way. But personally, you could probably just watch from 4 onwards and you'd get everything.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And that will sort of come in later on when we try and sort of nitpick Fallout, because one of the issues that I sort of have with this franchise is that there's not a lot of emotional weight to it, like, and there's no emotional stakes that are sort of carried over from movie to movie. So if you hop in at Ghost Protocol, myself having seen the first one, they might as well be different franchises. Like, one might as well be Jack Reacher, and the other one might as well be Mission Impossible. Like,
it does feel like they're sort of trying to tie it up with Dead Reckoning, obviously part one and part two, bringing back those legacy characters from the first few movies. But no, I understand what you're saying there. Really, the emotional core of this movie, or the whole franchise, sort of, it really depends on Ethan Hunt and her name's not
his wife, to mind, Julie.
But is Julia. That's the emotional core of the movie, and it's sort of like Tenet in a way, where there's Elizabeth Debicki's character who sort of has all of the job to do.
Yeah, in terms of the emotional storytelling.
Yeah. So there's really only that emotional aspect of the movies, but I mean, if I'm watching Mission Impossible, I'm watching it for the action, right?
Oh, like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I think Bond does better with the emotional package of the movie in a way.
Yeah, like I was talking to you while we were watching Fallout, that I think the Daniel Craig Bond movies, you know, they, you know, sure, not all of them are perfect. Some of them are. But what I think that franchise does really well is, like, the personal stakes of, like, there's always, you know, somebody close to Bond who's at risk or betrayed him or, you know, something like that. Whereas I feel, you know, with Ethan Hunt and this franchise, it's just every movie is just a mission.
Yep.
And that's one of the best things about the franchise.
Yep.
But it's also something that, like, holds it back from being, like, from Ethan Hunt being, like, a really interesting character. Like, it's you don't watch Mission Impossible for Ethan Hunt.
Yep.
You watch it for what Tom Cruise is going to do in the movie.
Yeah,
you know?
What stunts he's going to do,
And that has pros and cons, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's definitely a sacrifice of the movie, is the emotional aspects in it. But honestly, I don't really care about it, because, like, I'm watching the movie, like we were saying. I'm watching the movie for those stunts. I'm watching it for what Tom Cruise is going to do. And, I mean, the name of it is Mission Impossible, right? So he's been tuned into these missions. It's not a mission that's a personal thing to him.
Yeah.
It's just his job, and he has to get it done. Otherwise, the world's going to explode and implode. Yeah. So that's the stakes that we're dealing with.
So you've seen this movie a couple of times, right?
Oh, at least like 5 times. Okay.
Yeah. So you'd recommend rewatching it. Is there any particular things you like? Do you pick up on new things on rewatches? Like, because I haven't rewatched any of them.
Oh yeah, there's definitely I pick it up a few times. And new things every couple watches. I didn't enjoy this watch that we just had as much as the one that I had a few months ago, because I rewatched the series a few months back. But no, I was picking up new things on this watch. I think I was saying to you, like, certain scenes. There was a phone scene, which I won't go into detail with, that I picked up on. But there's a lot of detail to it. So, I'm still picking up on new things 5 watches later.
And I think what rewatching will do is sort of let you relax a bit with the information, because usually how these movies sort of start is that he gets some sort of device that gives him the mission.
Yep.
And there's a huge info dump at the start of the movie, and you're sort of like, you get lost like a minute in.
Yep.
And then it sort of explains it as it goes along, but then there's a lot of twists and turns and double crossing, and, like, you know, how in Solo, how by the end of the movie, you know, there's been three double crosses and you don't know who's on whose team anymore. It's
really confusing.
Yeah, it's a bit like that at some stages. Obviously better done than that movie.
But I think Mission Impossible is better with this than the Bond franchise, well, particularly Daniel Craig's franchise is. I always feel really confused when I'm watching the Daniel Craig films. Like, I don't know what's going on sometimes. Mm. Like, the story is just so detailed.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I felt watching some of these movies.
Mm. Okay.
In terms of, like, okay, why is Ethan Hunt at this location?
Mm.
What is he going to do? And sometimes they don't explain it, and that's a deliberate choice.
Mm.
And that's the fun of it. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know why he's doing this weird thing, and there's twists and turns, and those are really fun. But then that's not really the criticism. The criticism is, like, sometimes there's just so much information
mm-hmm.
that this really intelligent character is processing, but we're not.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, particularly in the first, your mission, should you choose to accept it, sequence, that was a huge exposition dump, and I think I leaned over to you and said...
In the very first movie, or in this one?
In this movie, yeah. That was like a huge
That one went on for
quite, 2 minute quite sequence. Well. Yeah. Which does sort of drag on.
Mm.
And there's always gonna be small things like that to nitpick, but for the majority this movie is very solid.
Yeah. Mm. Acting and characters from Mission Impossible Fallout, obviously Tom Cruise being the person who's carrying this franchise. He is this franchise.
Mm-hmm. You
know, it's nothing without him.
Yep.
And I think he's synonymous with Mission Impossible. But what do you have to say about Tom Cruise?
Oh, he's just awesome. Like, he's sort of carrying
cinema.
cinema, like the legacy of, like, Hollywood, right? Like, classic Hollywood acting. You see a lot of nowadays, like, modern films just sort of stray away from actors really having a passion for what they're doing.
An entertainment value
in
the product.
You know? Yeah, and it consistently feels like Tom Cruise has this undying love for what he does.
And for the people seeing the movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's why he makes these sort of movies, because...
Mm. And that's why he yells at people on set.
Yes. Have you seen that?
No, I have seen that.
You have seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, it's so funny. Have you seen Christian Bale's one?
No.
Just as good. Yeah, when we're done. Look up Christian Bale, Terminator 3 rant.
He was in Terminator 3?
Yeah, he was.
What?
And he absolutely goes off with this, like, lighting guy.
Mm.
And the whole thing was recorded. And you just feel so bad for the guy, because the guy's being like, Christian. Like, he's just trying to calm it down. He's like, don't.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
So bad. But anyway, it goes to show that, you know, Tom Cruise is very dedicated to the core of the business.
Mm.
And he knows his place. He knows mm-hmm. what he's supposed to be doing. He shut up about Scientology.
Yep.
You know, and he's just
acting.
Just giving the audience what he like, what we like. And that's why he's so beloved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like him. If you try to think of other beloved actors like that, you got to think of, like, Johnny Depp. And, mm-hmm. you know, the top of the top, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's not there. He'd like to
it always comes back to Dwayne The Rock
Johnson. He'd like to think he is. But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, in terms of Dwayne The Rock Johnson is a modern movie star.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not the Tom Cruise movie star.
No.
You know, Margot Robbie's a modern movie star. Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, modern movie stars.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Tom Cruise is just, like, a cut above the rest.
Well, I don't think he's a modern movie star. I think it's more so the fact that he's taking acting back to what it was. Like, he's not letting go of the past. He's just saying, this is how it used to be. This is what I'm doing. I'm sticking with it.
Mm.
And you have to respect the man for that, because he's been tuning out, like, absolute bangers since the start of his career.
Yeah. In terms of the side crew
mm-hmm.
for the Mission Impossible movies, obviously, Simon Pegg's a big one,
mm-hmm.
but is there any standouts from the side character point of view that you like in this movie?
In this movie in particular, well, to start with, I think the whole side crew is really well done. I think they all have great chemistry together, especially Simon Pegg and Tom Cruise on the screen. They mesh really well together. But I think the whole crew is really solid all around. Even Luther's character, I should say Luther as a character. I think he's been a great addition since the start, obviously, and sort of bringing him back, because I don't think he was in Ghost Protocol.
No, I don't think so.
Or he might have been right at the end, and I'm not sure about Rogue Nation, he might have been in that. But obviously he was in the first movie. So yeah, they're solid, but I mean, standouts have to be, for me, Rebecca Ferguson and Solomon Lane's actor, who I don't actually know his name.
Yeah, the bad guy.
The bad guy.
In this, and he's carried over from the previous movie. Yeah. So, yeah, if you are going to start somewhere with a Mission Impossible franchise and you wanted to minimize the number of movies that you needed to watch,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know why you would do that, but you could start with Rogue Nation.
You could.
If you really wanted to.
Yeah.
Because if you watch this movie, you're going to think, who's the bad guy? Like, who's that guy? Like, why is he such a threat? Because he is a direct carryover. And they're talking about the syndicate, and the syndicate's set up in the previous movie. So,
you could probably think of it as, like, the Harry Potter franchise, where David Yates, who directed the final 3 or 4 movies, sort of had his own franchise in the franchise, where he sort of changed things up and made like a little inside trilogy or quadrilogy. That's sort of what it is with Mission Impossible and Christopher McQuarrie doing his own thing, and sort of with James Bond, where it sort of carries over into the next film. That's sort of what Christopher McQuarrie's sort of getting with here. And I'm sure Dead Reckoning, obviously it's a two-parter, so that's going to be a direct carryover. So there's going to be a linkage going on there. But yeah, if you're going to start anywhere, I personally would say Ghost Protocol, but you could start at Rogue Nation.
Yeah, Ghost Protocol is a good movie. Yeah. So ideally you'd start with Ghost Protocol, but in terms of what is the essential information you need to enjoy this one, I think
Rogue Nation
is mandatory viewing.
Yep.
You know?
100%. So. Yep.
Henry Cavill joins the cast. He's sort of like a new addition every now and then. They bring somebody new in to sort of spice things up. And I thought he was really good in this. I mean, he's not, like, he doesn't give a great acting performance, but, like, the presence that he has is good, and he's just, like, an absolute tank.
Yeah.
And that's something that Tom Cruise can't do.
Yeah.
Because he's a very small man.
Yeah.
And, you know, while he is a big presence on screen, and he's obviously very dedicated, like, stuntman and fighter, so he does a lot of his, you know, fighting and stuff. He can't just pick up and throw someone.
I remember you were laughing at that happening with Henry Cavill in the movie. Yeah. Just chucking people through, like, windows and mirrors and just
the
and speed
that he does that, just the ferocity of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I really enjoyed that, just because you don't get that from the other movies.
No.
You know, you don't have, like, that brute force. You know, it's always, like, very skilled, you know.
Yeah, and I think Henry Cavill was a great addition to this movie in particular. Like you said, he's not a standout, but he services the plot very well, and definitely a necessary addition in terms of what's happening. Not the best performance, but solid.
Yeah. Visual standpoint, I think this movie looked really good. Definitely the best in terms of the franchise.
Yep.
And I've been talking to you as we sort of progress through the movies, but with every movie, it seems like the franchise is becoming more and more modern, and just in terms of the filmmaking standpoint.
Yep.
And, you know, the visuals, how the film looks. Because if you look at that first film, like, it's very grainy, because that's just how they were doing movies back then. But then also, like, you know, the cinematography and just the way that it's shot is very old-fashioned sort of thing, you know?
And the technology.
Yeah, of course, with the visual effects.
It all feels like old school, you know, yeah.
Yeah. but now it's, the camera work is exceptional. The cinematography is great. But yeah, I think the camera work trumps the cinematography in most of the movies, in terms of, like, how they film the action.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And how they film those incredible stunts. Because Tom Cruise is a madman, but you've got to get a camera up there as well.
Yeah.
And so that may involve somebody doing the stunt as well with a camera.
Yeah. Probably so, most of the time, someone doing the stunt with the camera.
Mm.
More than you would probably recognize.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the visuals are a huge, huge sort of selling factor for this franchise, especially when it comes to the action.
Yeah.
Because I think in terms of action movies, I think this might have the best action punching that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, and that probably first this movie and then second the previous Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
And then third the previous Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
And then maybe like Casino Royale or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. The Mission Impossible definitely like relies heavily on its stunt work and its coordination and, you know, how the action occurs and how they film it. That's like a huge portion of this movie. And that's why they sort of sacrifice on the script sometimes. But I still really think the script is solid in this. I remember watching this for the first time in theaters back in 2018. When did Spider-Verse come out? 2018?
Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah.
This came out the same year as Spider-Verse. And it's... I think it's between that and Fallout for me.
2017 was Spider-Verse.
Oh, then it might have been 2017.
Yeah, because it would have been 2017 because that's when Justice League came out.
Yeah, so it's between Fallout and Spider-Verse for me in terms of what's the best movie that year.
Actually, I think it might have been 2018.
Maybe. I think it was 2018. Yeah. But regardless, it's around that time period. And now I can't remember what I was saying.
2017, I mean, there were some good movies in time, like Blade Runner.
That was a good year. 2017 really good year. Yeah.
And so is 2016, to be fair. But yeah, let's go talk about the sound then. In terms of the score, I thought the score was good. I mean, there's no tracks in particular that I recall from the film that I need to go and listen to on Spotify.
How about the intro fuse burning sequence?
Those are always great, but it's always like a very similar thing, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to have one, it doesn't, I mean, I'm sure there is a difference in between the movies. There's a difference. I'm sure there is, but, you know, the main theme is obviously very catchy, you know, and so full credit to whoever made that theme in the first place.
I think it's Schifrin, it might have been Lalo Schifrin or something. But he made it like ages ago
For the TV series.
For the TV series, and then... Since then, they've sort of got a new composer with every edition in the franchise to sort of do their spin on it, which I think is like a really cool idea.
Yeah, for sure. I think the music was the best in this movie.
For sure.
Comparing it to the previous movies in the franchise.
Yeah. So Lorne Bolv, who composed this, has obviously had a bit of a hit or miss run in terms of his discography. I mean, Black Widow was just atrocious.
Oh, yes.
But... this theme is just phenomenal, especially the fuse burning sequence. I've listened to it countless times, and every time, I just think it's phenomenal. Mm. So that's, we'll talk about it later on.
Yeah. The Mission Impossible theme is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows what that theme sounds like. You know, it's one of those rare themes. Like, people can hum Star Wars, they can hum Mission Impossible, they can hum Jaws, but like little others, you know, in terms of like the general knowledge, pop culture sort of.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, you're saying like it's not a noticeable difference, but if you listen to the first theme in Mission Impossible 1,
yeah, probably.
And I then just, Fallout, it's totally different.
Probably. Yeah. But it's, very catchy. So yeah, I enjoyed the music, but it wasn't like, you know, how I enjoyed the music in Dune or whatever.
Yeah. Which is understandable.
We'll dive into more like detailed thoughts now. So I guess we'll give a brief spoiler warning, but yeah, I think the movie's great. So if you wanted to check out an action movie and it's on your streaming service or something, you know, you would probably say go out of your way to watch it no matter what the cost. But you know, I'd say, you know, if you got it on streaming, if it's there and you're thinking maybe I should check it out, you should check it out because it's good. And then maybe check out some of the previous movies as well before you jump into this one. But yeah, it's definitely worth the sort of getting invested in the franchise. That's what I was sort of worried about because there are so many movies and like it's quite a big like record. I think
there's seven in the franchise, so.
And not a lot of them are great.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say 30, 40% of them are terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest are kind of meh.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, from hearing what you've said.
What I'm saying.
And then my own your personal thoughts experience. On the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is understandable. That's probably what I would say about, yeah.
But the good thing is that they're getting better with each installment. They're not getting
which
worse.
Which is the thing, right? Like, yeah. It's continually improving. And you don't see that a lot in franchises. Mm. Where they get better as they go along.
The opposite.
I can't really think of anything. Maybe the OG trilogy of Star Wars, but...
Mm, even so, I mean, I think people would say Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of a wicked take on my laugh. I can't think of another franchise where it gets better.
Aliens? No. That definitely got that worse.
It's like Predator got second so movie. Much worse. You have to think about like Alien Covenant and all of them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
People really don't like
from Aliens 1 to Alien to Aliens.
Think about it as like the Vince Gilligan of movies.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah, like season 1 is always, you know, it's entertaining enough to watch, but it doesn't hit as good as the last season
because
it continuously gets better for sure.
Yeah, and obviously Tom Cruise is getting older, but he keeps doing stunts that keep upping...
it keeps escalating the stakes.
And it's like, where is this man going to stop?
Yeah,
he's almost, probably almost 60. He might be 60.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, you know, in the last movie, he was holding onto the side of a plane. So it's like, where is this guy going to stop?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a little sneak peek if you want to get into Mission Impossible.
Yeah, so because it's getting continuously better, it's a great franchise to get invested in now because we know that we're going to have two more movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at the track record, they're going to be just as good as the previous one, which was very good. So,
yep.
You know, they're not going to get worse because I just don't see that happening with this franchise. Like, how could it go wrong? To be fair, like, because there are, you know, sort of less emotional stakes as the Bond movies or whatever...
Mm-hmm.
There is more opportunity for controversy in the Bond movies because, you know, what if Bond doesn't get the girl or if, you know, Bond, you know, is killed or, you know, or Bond's mentor is killed. Like, those decisions anger part of the fan base or just like the general audience because we're invested in the characters and the emotional journeys. Yep. But with this... We just know that in the next movie, they're going to get a kick-ass mission to go on. Mm-hmm. It's going to be insane. Tom Cruise is going to be doing some insane thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be incredible to watch. And then it's, you know, it has good humor.
Mm.
It has great performances and good, like, stunts and everything like that. It's entertaining from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie's over. Like, it's not going to, you know... There's absolutely no way that... they could kill the goodwill of the franchise in the next movie because that's not what these movies are about.
Yeah.
That the only possible way they could do that is if the mission was just dropping Tom Cruise on an isolated island and just leaving him there for 2.5 hours.
That's actually a really good point. I honestly can't see this franchise going downhill because for starters, we've received two amazing films from Christopher McQuarrie, that have a simple yet very repeatable good premise. And he's obviously directing the next two movies as well, so where can it go wrong? I mean, he's not going to do some controversial thing where he doesn't include Tom Cruise in the movie for a third of the movie. Like, that's just not going to happen. Imagine if that did happen, then I'd look like an absolute idiot. But it can't go downhill, right? Yeah. It's only better from here. Which is surprising because I think this movie is phenomenal.
And Tom Cruise, you know that he's got his heart in the right place. We've seen the Top Gun Maverick, but you know he's only going to do a movie if it's going to deliver what is necessary for the franchise. Mm-hmm. He's not just like, you know,
not doing it for the money.
Yeah, he's not just J.J. Abrams who would just reboot something just because he has the opportunity to do so.
Yep.
And hoping that he could just replicate what has come before and just squeak by, you know, sort of unnoticed.
Yeah. I think if Tom Cruise makes something, he wants to make it have an impact on cinema. He wants to make it lasting, you know?
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams isn't making anything that's lasting more than, you know, 2 years.
Well, he certainly isn't anymore because all those projects are getting cancelled.
He's not doing anything, is he? And I mean, with the duo of Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise both producing these movies,
I mean, what can go wrong? Fingers crossed. I mean, the reason why he's getting really angry is because he knows that it's a beloved franchise and he has a mission to do. You know, not only just in the movie, but
it's sort of his own Mission Impossible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, to get a movie made during that sort of period,
that's the mission.
Was Mission Impossible.
Should
wasn't
you choose
it?
To accept?
Yeah,
it.
Yeah. Except we didn't. So, moving into this movie then specifically, because we talked a bit about the franchise at large.
Spoiler warning.
What is it from this movie in particular that makes you think that it's one of the best action movies or whatever you think that it is?
Sort of like we've already talked about. I think it's the... Obviously, it's all of the elements sort of combined sort of amount to like a almost perfect project. But I think what we haven't really mentioned is it's how it crescendos, right? It's how it builds up to something. Because it starts off very solid, and there's obviously a few stunts at the start where it's just like right into it, and it's just like full stakes, like adrenaline pumping, you know, high octane stuff. But as it goes along, it sort of builds to this ending sequence, which is just like completely like off the wall, like Tom Cruise flying a helicopter, you know, batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And it builds up to that. So it has this period where it's everything that happens leads up to that point. There's nothing that's unnecessary. There's nothing that drags on. And I think the pacing, which is sort of what I'm saying, is just phenomenal. Just amazing pacing.
Yeah.
And I know you said that the last one had better pacing, but I think this is just really, really solid.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you. The pacing in this movie and the last movie was sensational.
Mm.
And yeah, you're completely right when you say that, you know, the plot of the movie is the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much else.
Mm.
It's just the mission.
Yep.
And it's a very complicated mission, and it's interesting to see it unravel.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there's not a lot of downtime between the action scenes.
Yep.
Because this franchise doesn't see itself as a formula action movie where you have a car chase,
mm-hmm.
and then you have 20 to 30 minutes of talking,
mm-hmm.
before you go into the next action scene,
mm-hmm.
and then 20 minutes of talking and then the next action scene.
Yep.
You know, it's just whatever is needed,
mm-hmm.
to get, you know, the character from accepting the mission to completing the mission is what happens.
Yep.
And, you know, the stakes along the way increase, but mm-hmm. I don't really look at that final flight at the end of the Fallout movie,
mm-hmm.
and think I'm not on the edge of my seat, but like I'm just enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
But what really sells this franchise and the pacing of the franchise, what makes it so exciting, is that you know Tom Cruise is doing this stuff in real life,
mm.
and that's what differentiates it. Like, mm-hmm. in my opinion, that's the one thing that differentiates this franchise from the Bourne franchise and mm-hmm. the Bond franchise and all that, is that you know Tom Cruise is actually doing this.
Yeah.
And no matter how crazy, you know that he's doing it.
Yep.
Unless he's like being, you know, in a car wreck or something. But then even so, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if he was in that.
Because it happens. Like the dude, you know, I think he broke his ankle or something while he was filming this.
Mm.
And like I said, there was a 7 month or so period where they had to pause the filming. But there's a shot in the movie where he breaks his ankle. You can't see it, but he gets up and he's like hobbling off screen and they keep it in. So it's like completely authentic. And that's the great part about it, is the authenticity of the filmmaking. And that's what made Maverick so good as well, is that they flew these planes for a large portion of the filmmaking.
Yeah. And it just adds that extra element of excitement,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the movies are very exciting from start to finish. It's, you know, action. And with character in there as well, with funny, witty dialogue. And yeah, it's not like a horror movie where, you know, you have the scary bit, and then you have, you know, can relax because it's daytime, there's a bit of character stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, oh, no, it's nighttime again, so here we go, another scary session. It's just what is necessary. It's like, you know, if you think of the great movies like The Dark Knight, for instance, there's no conversation about, okay, we've had the Joker, you know, tank, or the 18-wheeler being flipped. Now we have to have 20 minutes of talking or whatever.
Yep.
It's just what is necessary. And that's how, that's the best paced movies are. What is necessary, put that in there, and that is enough to make a feature-length film.
Yep.
It's not, you know, okay, we're going to make a Venom movie, we're going to have this action scene and this action scene, what are we going to do in the meantime?
Filler in between.
Yeah.
There's everything has purpose. That's the thing about it, is that everything has purpose. Every action sequence has something that it's speaking for, you know. There's the motorcycle chase where, on face value, it's like, hey, this is just a cool motorcycle chase, but you get towards the end and it's like, where is this leading? And then you realize, and it's Tom Cruise escaping on this little boat. So it builds towards something, which it doesn't feel like a waste of time.
And they go straight into it as well. There's no sort of opening prologue or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, mysterious character scenes, and it's just straight into an action scene that we don't know sort of the premise of.
Yep.
And we find out later, and it's always connected to, you know, the actual plot of the movie. It's not just, oh, that's his previous mission that you haven't seen, because they could easily do that. They could just, oh, you know, let's just have him on a huge plane and have it do some spirals or whatever, and we can just say, oh, that was his previous mission that he did in between movies.
Yeah.
You know, like now on to the next one, you know, but they work it in, and then that would take a lot of time in the writing room, I imagine.
It's sort of like Incredibles 2, where they continue on from the first movie with the Underminer, and it's like, yeah, cool, we all wanted to see that, but like, Tom Cruise is like, nah, we're not wasting any time. We're moving on. We're going straight ahead. New stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we all want. What's up next on the agenda? Talked a bit about cinematography. I kind of want to have a chat about the quality of the movie. Obviously, we watched this on Netflix. Brazilian Netflix.
Shout out.
Shout out to Brazilian Netflix. I think the quality in certain sequences where there's the IMAX ratio was awesome, man. Yeah. Like, this is a streaming service, and it looked brilliant.
Yeah. On a 1080p TV.
Yeah. So, obviously, I'm probably going to pick up the 4K when it comes around to the right time. I mean, that's going to look absolutely phenomenal. But, yeah, as for the quality of the movie, I just wanted to have a chat about, like, the Halo jump.
Oh, yeah.
And how cool those sequences look. Obviously, the whole final sequence with the helicopter chase. It's all shot really, really well. And like you were saying, it's all captured very clearly, so you know what's happening. And even in like a helicopter fight chase, where it could probably get convoluted really quickly, it doesn't. It makes it so the audience can understand it, which I appreciate. That's why, you know, you see Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which just has abysmal cinematography and choreography.
Or any modern action movie, really. The Bond movies are pretty good in terms of their gun work. Like how, like if Daniel Craig picks up a gun, you're like, oh, here we go, it's going to be good. But like, apart from Casino Royale, like the fist punching, like it's been okay, but those movies are fine, but it's more of like the generic action movies that we get nowadays, where as soon as people start punching, you just lose track of what's going on, and it's just, you know, they shake the camera, you know, just like Black Widow, you know, the Falcon and Winter, not Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the Winter Soldier, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, the 2014 MCU movie. Everyone's like, oh, that has great choreography or whatever. Have they seen these movies? Because this movie puts that to shame.
It does. And it really does.
You know, There are some good hand-to-hand scenes in The Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Not as good as this.
No.
Not even close.
Yep. Yep. That's a good point.
And it's because, it's not just because, you know, they probably have more talented, like, you know, stunt choreographers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they put more effort into it.
Mm.
And they have actors who are actually willing to do it.
Yep.
And if you sign on to a movie like Mission Impossible, you know that you're going to have to do something because Tom Cruise is doing all of it.
Yeah.
So he sets that example.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know,
get a stunt person.
You walk into a green screen MCU movie.
Yeah.
You know, you're not expecting to do anything. In fact, you may be concerned that you're just expected to do nothing because
you're just like there for the dialogue.
You're just standing on a green screen and, you know, old mate Kevin Feige's just saying, oh, you're shooting this and that, and that's a big monster over there.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, it all looks green to me, but all right. And that just really takes away from, like, the you know, how visceral the action is in this movie, you know?
Realistic.
And sure, it's not always Henry Cavill throwing people around. Mm. You can't always do that.
Yeah.
But it's still so much better than everything else.
Yeah.
And I think it's because that they know that this movie, like this movie franchise, that's what it does best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they put the focus on.
Mm.
It's not...
You never lose sight of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no performances where you're like, oh, you know, that performance just really captured my heart. You know, it's, oh, that was a great car chase, or that was a great motorbike chase, you know? And that's what you come to this franchise for. And it puts the other action movies to shame.
Yeah. I mean, think about, this is a pretty bad analogy, but think about like the Batman 2022, obviously, the Batman car chase sequence versus the car chase sequence around the, just past the halfway point in this movie.
Was that in Paris?
Yep.
Yeah. And they're going down the stairs at the start.
Yeah, just think about how realistic one feels compared to the other.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a Batmobile, so you can't have a Batmobile. But I'm pretty sure they used a real car.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a real car.
Batmobile.
Yeah. Yeah. Like something like Fast and Furious, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, that started off being very practical.
Yeah.
And then they just decided, oh, no, that's fine. People will watch it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, let's just do it all special effects.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't have the same feel to it.
There's no realism in
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I really liked the car chase at the start of No Time to Die.
Yep.
That was a great car chase. And that was done practically.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, practical motorbike stunts and stuff. But Daniel Craig wasn't doing it. That's for goddamn sure.
Yeah.
Whereas with this... You know, you see Tom Cruise going really fast on a motorbike, and it's impressive,
mm-hmm.
but you know that it's real, and that gets you so much more into it.
Immersed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are some phenomenal chases in this, like, even in the last movie, that motorbike chase, where they're going, like, an incredible speed, and they're just chasing in between cars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that the Batman... car sequence is not very good.
Mm.
Like, it is all over the place. Like, Greg Fraser is a great cinematographer, but that is hard to watch. That car,
it's very choppy.
Yeah.
And I think I realize that as more as, you know, the more I watch it, because I quite like that the first time I watched it, but on rewatches, it starts to get noticeable that is very, very CGI heavy.
Mm.
And the explosions and stuff cover up a lot of
It's all red, you know, deliberately.
It's hard to look at.
Yeah, and it's deliberately that way to try and hide, you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather it be all red than just like a grey mess like the MCU movies are.
Yeah.
But either way, it's got to be a bit better.
Yeah.
But while we're on the topic of like stunts and stuff, what are your favourite stunts in this movie in particular? Because obviously we have the Halo jump.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew about that because I'd heard that, you know, it's an IMAX scene or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, oh, okay, we're going to have this cool Halo jump at the end of the movie because that'll be the big stunt or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it's in like the first 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's just how this franchise is.
Like, that's how it operates.
Right? Yeah. Like the clip of Tom Cruise hanging on the side of an airplane. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's got to be the end of the movie. It's like the first 2 minutes of the previous movie.
Yeah. It's so, literally the opening sequence of that movie.
Yeah. And it doesn't really have much of an effect on the plot. Sure, it's tied in, but it's not the big climactic mission. It's just, oh, by the way, welcome to movie. Yeah. Is Tom Cruise on the side of the plane? Yeah,
it's because it knows what people want, right? Yeah. It's they want to see Tom Cruise doing the most ridiculous stuff that he is doing.
Yeah. But what are your favorites from this movie?
It's probably going to have to be the helicopter flight chase.
Mm.
Just not because it's like cool, but because Tom Cruise actually learned how to fly a helicopter for this movie. And when you really start to look into like the extra footage and all of the documentaries and special features and stuff, there's this one sequence where he does like this sort of helicopter nose dive into like, I don't know, some sort of 360 wizardry.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like one of the like hardest helicopter moves to pull off, and everyone on the set was like absolutely scared, like out of their minds. Yeah. And Tom Cruise is just like, nah, I'm doing it. I'm flying a helicopter. I'm doing this dangerous move, and he just pulls it off with absolute ease.
Mm.
And it's such a cool sequence. There's actually a shot in the trailer that's actually cut out of the movie. And it's the helicopter's like going straight towards like a truck that's like oncoming. I would have liked to see that, but it's not in the movie. But the halo jump is also really, really cool.
Yeah, the halo jump's cool. Yeah, the car chase is probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when Tom Cruise gets on a motorbike. He's like allergic to the helmets.
Yeah.
He's always got to have his helmet off.
Well, you got to see that it's Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You do have to see that it's Tom Cruise. But yeah, and then I always love a good Tom Cruise running scene. Mm-hmm. And there's some great running in this, where he's chasing down Henry Cavill after Henry Cavill sort of turns.
Mm.
And
he doesn't turn, but he's always in the back.
Well, that's like the cinematic sort of, you know, he like turns the heel. Reveal. It's like when you turn the heel? It's like when you go from a good guy to a bad guy. But I get what you're saying. You know, he wasn't a good guy to start with. Yeah. He was always a bad guy. Yeah. But a better word would be the twist.
Yeah.
You know, where you find out that Henry Cavill's actually the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that reveal was really good. Very smart way of doing that. Sort of they trick him into revealing himself.
I really wish you hadn't known about that.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely think you wouldn't have guessed it. Because they don't really reveal anything up until the actual reveal that alludes to the fact that he's the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. Except for the part that he kind Except of wants to set up Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, but I didn't even pick up on that on my first few watches. Right. So, I mean, you might have, but
I didn't. Yeah, well, I thought he was just, like, trying to get Hunt off the case. Yeah. Like, trying to bring him down just because he was being reckless or whatever.
Yeah, and well, there's conflicting, like, obviously there's the CIA and then there's the IMF. So they're two different agencies that are sort of conflicting in terms of what they think is best.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what it comes across is with Henry Cavill's character. You know, he's just trying to throw Ethan Hunt under the bus.
Yeah.
And get him sort of kicked off the mission. But yeah, that whole sequence where they sort of, Benji's like playing off his Solomon Lane.
Yeah.
Really, really well done. And then it sort of backtracks and it tells you everything that's led up to that point.
Yeah.
And you know, what they've done to sort of trick him into this illusion. So it all has purpose and it all comes back.
Yeah, and it's a good fun moment as well because Benji gets to wear a mask.
Mm.
You know, so there's always different elements to what's going on. And they're all sort of, you know, all the different elements you need for a great action movie. Mm-hmm. You know, a really good twist that you don't see coming at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though I knew Henry Cavill was going to end up being the guy that Tom Cruise was fighting, I didn't know in that moment that it would be revealed. I didn't know specifically what Henry Cavill was doing.
Yep.
You
didn't know it was John Mark.
Yeah, so I thought I was completely fooled by the movie, and just like Henry Cavill was, like the character was fooled and by the guy wearing the mask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't think, oh, that might be somebody wearing a mask, you know, because you just wouldn't.
It does really well with that in terms of fooling the audience and fooling the character at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a sequence at the start where they're in this makeshift hospital and they're trying to get Del Brooke, who's like a nuclear sort of special person.
Yeah.
And they need to get him to sort of admit to these codes by reading his manifesto or reading a manifesto, I should say. And it's only until it unfolds that all of the walls literally come down.
Yeah.
And you see what it actually is.
Mm. And they're just completely fooling by having Benji wearing the mask of the CNN guy. Yep. reading it on, you know, live TV in quotation. Yep. Marks.
But he's really just in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fantastic. That really fooled me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I thought it was weird that how fast they got the message.
Well, that's what I was about to say.
Because Tom Cruise is like, okay, we'll transport the file to the news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll read it. And then literally the next second, the news anchor's being handed something.
Receives it, yeah. Yeah.
But if you're a stupid criminal, I guess he's not stupid. He was a really smart guy.
But he's
emotional.
He's not
about
thinking about
it. Yeah,
that.
He's emotional, yeah.
And that's realistic. Like, you wouldn't be thinking like...
Oh, they probably... I 100%, a room like that has been created to fool somebody in the past. Seems like a very smart idea.
Yeah.
And that's so smart of the movie to sort of come up with those ideas.
Yep. And you see that whole acting sequence where Tom Cruise is being held back by Luther. And Luther's like, don't do it, Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise is just like acting his heart out.
Yeah.
Which is just all like for show.
Mm.
That was a really great sequence. And there's multiple sequences in the movie like that where it fools the audience and it fools the character. Mm. And I remember you saying stuff like, that was weirdly fast. And I was just sitting there like, wait till it happens.
Yeah. Another specific example that I remember is towards the end of the motorbike chase. When Tom Cruise gets off the bike and he rolls into a bush and you think, what's he doing? He's just going to be in a bush. He's going to get captured.
Yeah.
But then you find out that there's a net there and he cuts the net and he falls through to the canal and that's where the boat is for Benji and Luther to pick him up.
Yeah.
And so that's a great moment as well. And there's lots of little moments like that throughout the movie.
Mm.
You know, so it puts it above the rest in terms of the action movies.
Yeah.
I love that chase where Tom Cruise is just gunning for Henry Cavill and he's just running.
Mm.
You know, that's I like that sort of stuff.
It's a good combination of comedy and like high stakes as well, because you've got Benji, who's admittedly the comedic relief in this franchise.
Yeah, but not annoyingly so.
Not annoyingly.
He's still like he feels like a real person.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Simon Pegg's good at, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's Simon Pegg's... that's where he comes from, because I think he was involved in comedy. Obviously, he's done stuff with Edgar Wright.
Yeah, and he plays similar characters, like, in those movies. Like, he's a relatable person. He's kind of a normal guy, but he's also hilarious.
The average Joe.
Yeah. Whereas in this, he's more of, like, a wisecracking sort of nerd.
Yeah.
And maybe not in, like, Hot Fuzz and stuff. It's more, like, comedy that he's not creating himself. It's more, like, we're laughing at him and, you know, at... his mate.
Yeah.
And sort of the situations are always very funny in Edgar Wright movies. But
yeah.
In this, he's like delivering jokes and, you know, he's getting the laughs out of, you know,
out people. Of the audience.
But
yeah.
It does go around a bit, like Tom Cruise gets some laughs as well, because he does some, like, you know, he does some jokes that don't make him look like an idiot, you know, which is very hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like certain sequences in that chase sequence where, you know, Benji's like, he's reading like the directions wrong on the map and he's like, oh, sorry, it was in 2D. And then Tom Cruise is like jumping off like a four-story like building.
Yeah.
It's just great stuff like that that the franchise knows how to do well. Mm.
I remember in the previous movie, a really funny moment for me in Rogue Nation was when Jeremy Renner and Luther are in the car and they've just found out where Tom Cruise and, you know, all of his friends are, and they're in the middle of a car chase themselves.
Yeah.
And they like drift around the corner and they stop and like they see that the cars are like side by side, and Jeremy Renner and Luther in one car and Tom Cruise
in the other.
And what's his name? What's the guy's name that Simon Pegg plays?
Oh my God. Benji.
Benji.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're in the other car.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny because they just like stop at the same time and then they just like look through the window. They're like, hello.
Yeah.
It's just, so that's a really great moment that doesn't like take away from the stakes that they're still in a car chase and it's still very serious.
Yeah.
But it's also just funny.
Yep. So. And that's also with, there's also sequences like that in Ghost Protocol, where, you know, Tom Cruise is climbing the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And his thing begins to slip. And then he sees it, like, on the side of the building over there.
Yeah.
It's just great stuff like that, that it knows how to sort of balance with the, with the stakes.
Yeah.
I think we're sort of on to the end of the movie now in terms of discussion. And yeah, we've already kind of talked about it, with the whole helicopter chase sequence, but I wanted to have a chat about this sequence where, obviously Tom Cruise, meets Julia at this, medical camp, which, is a really, really nice moment. Because obviously Tom Cruise probably hasn't seen her in many years, face to face and had that discussion. And it just so happens that it's in between, like the biggest mission of his life in terms of like world destruction, and killing one third of the world's population, or rather starving. So Tom Cruise doesn't have any time to sort of, reminisce with his, I should say ex-wife. So
even though the world could be ending.
Yeah, and you know that, like, he can't waste any time because he has to find this device, and they have to find the bombs. So there's this really, really sort of bittersweet moment where, you know, he's having this chat with Julia's new fiance, and then he, like, buggers off, because we don't really care about him. And then Julia and Tom Cruise have this like literal like 2 second like sort of embrace, and then Tom Cruise is like, I'm sorry, and then he just like runs off, and it, you can see him like running off, which I think is just an amazing sort of sequence.
Man on a mission.
Like he feels like destroyed by that, but he puts the mission first. And that's a great reflection in terms of the starting of the movie, where he prioritizes Benji versus, rather Luther versus the world's population. Because he takes his teammate over saving the world. And then this is sort of the flip side of that, where he realizes saving the greater population is more important, and he doesn't have time to sort of... waste time, for lack of a better word, with Julia.
That was a good like added complication for the third act. And I think that that reveal was really good, and especially how it was like the reasoning for her to be there, like she's working in this medical sort of facility, and they were set up there, they were funded by, you know, an anonymous donor. So they were set up by the bad guys to be in that location because they knew that they would have the radioactive frequencies or whatever, or the electromagnetic frequencies to like distract from the nuclear weapons there. So yeah, I think that was a really interesting, like, it was a good reveal for the emotional purposes of the movie, but they also explained it very well.
And it's good for Tom Cruise's character, because Luther has this exposition probably about halfway through the movie as well, where he's speaking to Rebecca Ferguson, and he's essentially saying like, Julia is Tom Cruise's reason to keep going. That's like his driving force. So she being there in the midst of a nuclear bombing, he's like, he's on like full alert, like he's gonna do everything to stop this and happening. He does.
Goodness me.
So that's the reason why he's just like, I'm gonna get it, I'm gonna get this device, I'm gonna stop it, because if she dies, then what's the reason to keep going?
100%. And yeah, I'm definitely feeling what Henry Cavill's character is feeling during that helicopter chase. Essentially just like, oh my God, this guy's crazy. Like, he just keeps on coming at him. And, you know, he gets, He tries to drop the rocks on them first, which is an interesting idea. And then that doesn't work out. And so then he goes into alternate methods, which include ramming the helicopter. I mean, just And that entire sequence is just fantastic because it's all, you know, shot practically or whatever, you know. Like, it's a real background.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. It's a real background and not a green screen background. There's real wind. Tom Cruise's hair is, like, blowing all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that it's real, or at least it fools you into believing that it's real.
Yeah. Some of the camera shots, like, underneath the helicopter where Tom Cruise is, like, hanging under it.
Yeah.
They look like they just film, like, on a normal camera without any sort of, like, sort of digitalization going on.
Yeah.
And it looks like really authentic, which I really like. But that's essentially the main gist of the movie that we have a chat about.
Music segments, so anything that stands out to you in particular?
Yeah, so I think the theme's literally just called Fallout. It's literally just called Fallout, which is kind of generic, but there's sort of a rendition of that theme as well, that plays in the final sequence, I want to say.
Yeah.
And that is called... Ooh. I can't really remember what it's called, but we'll have to add it to... I think it's You Should You Choose to Accept. Oh, no, sorry. It's A Storm Is Coming, I think.
Okay.
So we'll chuck them in the rewatch playlist. And if you don't know, the rewatch playlist is essentially a Spotify playlist that is sort of comprised of the... is it two? We max it to two. Minimum one, max two songs from each movie that we review on the rewatch podcast. So you can view that on Spotify and the link should be in our description.
Yeah. Sweet. Moving on to final thoughts, I'll go first because I know you're going to give the A+, and now I'm not, so I want to justify why I'm doing that. So I'm going to give it like just a straight A because I think it's a very good action movie, one of the best action movies that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, you know, coming back to it time and time again, I think the emotional standpoint's going to leave me a bit with something to be desired about it.
Yep.
I think a lot of other action movies that are just as good in terms of the camera work and all of the stunts and stuff achieve sort of better emotional stakes than this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, it's still incredibly entertaining and it gives you most of what you want. I'm just missing a bit of like tangible emotion from Ethan Hunt's story.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, you know, I go along for the ride and it's a great time. So I'm going to give it an A because, you know, I don't think it's like, you know, the greatest action movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are other movies that do a few things better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's still very well made and I'm looking forward to the next one really, really, really much because I think it could be just as good, if not better. So
I was literally just going to say that I think Dead Reckoning, what they're going to try to do is they're obviously going to try to wrap up Ethan Hunt's sort of character arc.
And that's why I think it might be the best one, because it will have the emotion.
With that is going to come emotion. You're going to see Julia, you're going to see Rebecca Ferguson's character sort of come into play in terms of being the emotional strings for Ethan Hunt. So that's why I think that you'll probably like Dead Reckoning more, is because it's going to have the same action. It's going to have those crazy stunts with all of that emotional stuff to go along with it. But for me, I mean, this movie's just absolutely fantastic. Like, I've watched it numerous times, and each time, I wouldn't say it gets better, but I would say it's just as solid as the last time. It's just such an enjoyable movie to watch. In the theatre, it was just an absolute pleasure to watch that in the movie theatre. I think you watched it in the movie theatre, and then you left or something?
No, I didn't watch it.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. Well, that was a mistake.
It was.
This is like a must watch in a movie theater. It's kind of like Baby Driver in that aspect, where it's so much better in the movies than it is on, you know, home viewing. And that's a shame, but you know, eventually we'll have like a 500-inch television that we'll be able to watch this on with surround sound.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the cinematic experience of the final two. Now's the time to get on the Mission Impossible hype train because after those are over, it's done. Mm-hmm. So you want to get on the hype train now so you can experience the finale with everyone else.
Yep, for sure. And like we've already said, I mean, everything just amounts for this being just an absolute pleasure of a movie. standouts have to be the choreography, the stunts, and the music for me. But everything else is just great, just top-notch stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely going to have to be the A+.
Mm. Fair enough. All right, so that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you very much for listening. And if you'd like to follow us on Instagram, you can do so at The Rewatch Pod. If you'd like to subscribe to the YouTube channel, just search The Rewatch on YouTube. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya.